Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, Mitt Romney is ahead of Barack Obama by 14 points. That is our good martini today. We should probably clarify that a little bit. It's from a Politico George Washington University battleground poll, and he is ahead by 14, but specifically among middle-class voters, which, you know, the way that the president's been trying to demonize Romney as the enemy of the middle class, who will raise their taxes, which is not true, you would think that the president would be doing pretty well among the middle class, but it's 55-41%. Unfortunately, the middle class only makes up 54% of the total American electorate, so you can guess how those outside of the middle class are leaning at this point. But, Jim, it's still good to see that those who really do make up the bulk of the American people aren't buying the president's class warfare.
Yeah, two couple bits of good news in this one. The first is that this poll result kind of confirms what you would have expected in this kind of economy. I guess, you know, if the administration wants to point out that the stock market is doing pretty well, they can. And it's worth noting that Obama said back during the presidential campaign of 2008 that the performance of the stock market isn't really a good indicator of the strength of the economy. It just shows the prosperous investors are doing okay and everybody else is still struggling to get by. You look at job creation, the 8.1% unemployment rate, the number of people who've left the workforce. I think perhaps most significantly, take-home pay and median income numbers down significantly since 2009. That's where you look at this and you're like, man, you know, for a guy running on I'm going to help the middle class, the incumbent has a terrible record on how the middle class has their quality of their life over the past 4 years. And so this is kind of what you would expect to see here. Another thing worth noting, and again, you know, different people will have different polls they'll prefer, but there's something kind of intriguing about this one, because the headline would be, Obama's up by 50%, 47%. And admittedly, we on the, you know, we've been gotten very used to seeing the number, the figure 47% associated with President Obama lately. But they point out that actually they're rounding up. For what it's worth, you know, you don't always get exact even numbers. And so it's 2.6% lead for President Obama. Now, back when they did it in early August, he was up by 2.1%. So you'd rather have Romney ahead. By no means does it suggest the bottom is falling out and that he's in serious trouble if, you know, the grand total is a 0.5% shift. That's basically, you know, well within the margin of error and probably, you know, nothing significant. I was just listening to MSNBC earlier this morning. I know I really shouldn't do that. But the roundtable discussion on Chuck Todd's program was that the difference between actual figures, and they say most of the polls have either close or a slight lead for Obama, and the tone, and it was almost this admission that, you know, the way this race is covered, you'd think Obama was up by 10, and he's not. And it's one of those things where they kind of, you know, mentioned this, and I'm glad they acknowledged this. They didn't really say, and we should correct that, or the coverage inside the Beltway or the discussion inside the Beltway should change. So you see poll results like this, and you realize, look, this is still a very winnable race for Mitt Romney. You know, the Romney campaign's honest. They'd rather be ahead, and they probably wish they'd in a better spot than they are right now. But we got, you know, three presidential debates, one vice presidential debate, you know, probably five, six solid weeks of ads coming up, and, you know, and then events. You know, stuff like the Benghazi attack demonstrate that everything can change in a New York minute. So, you know, the idea that this race is out of there, is out of Romney's hands, is ridiculous. And, you know, when people, you hear that from somebody, it means they're spinning, and polls like this one reinforce that point.
Speaking of spinning, Jim, I believe Jim Messina, the president's campaign manager, has just sent out a bulletin saying since this is a national poll, we should ignore it because those don't matter anymore, apparently. Only the state polls.
Yeah, that's a weird comment, isn't it? I mean, you know, you kind of would figure that if the polls are looking a little bit better for Obama, he'd be trying to celebrate that. It's true. We don't have a national election. It's not a popular vote election. It's based on the Electoral College. It is worth noting that situations like 2000, in which you win the Electoral College but you lose the popular vote, are pretty darn rare.
Yeah.
So if you give me, you know, if Romney's ahead in the popular vote on Election Day, is it conceivable he could lose the Electoral College? Sure, but I wouldn't really count on that. I want Romney to be ahead. I want a popular vote win as well as an electoral win.
Well, on to martini number two now, Jim. And you mentioned the onslaught of advertising that we're likely to see in the home stretch of this presidential campaign. The issue of inaccuracy in advertising came up in the 60 Minutes interview between Steve Kroft and President Obama. Unfortunately for the world, they didn't actually make it into the actual broadcast that was aired on Sunday night. So you had to go online to find this. Here's Steve Kroft getting in the president's face a little bit about the fact that many of his advertisements are playing fast and loose with the truth.
Look, the fact checkers have had problems with the ads on both sides and say that they've been misleading and in some cases just not true. Does that disturb you? I mean, some of them are your ads.
You know, do we see sometimes us going overboard in our campaign? Are there mistakes that are made? Are there, you know, areas where there's no doubt that somebody could dispute how we are presenting things? You know, that happens in politics. I think.
Aren't the American people entitled to the truth or a better version of it? Well,
the truth of the matter is, most of the time we're having a vigorous debate about a vision for the country, you know, there's a lot at stake in this election.
And because there's a lot at stake, I guess it's just okay to go ahead and do that, Jim. And apparently, while Steve Kroft asked the question, those in charge of the final piece obviously didn't consider that worthy of attention to the American people.
Yeah, I mean, two elements to point out here. The first is we should be glad that Kroft asked the question and kind of pushes him on it. I guess we should be glad that we live in an era where when a news entity interviews the president, they put the whole thing online so people can see the whole thing, not just what they have time to air. However, for those of us who think of the media as being hopelessly biased and partisan and things like that, this is a good example of it because I don't understand how that can't be considered news. The idea that that's not among the more important things he said in that interview is pretty hard to believe. When you look at everything else that could be in there. And the other thing is, you know, it's, hey, 60 Minutes, you're interviewing the president. What else are you doing that night that's not, you know, that's more important than stuff like that? The other thing which is really fascinating is, so look, what's Obama's response? Well, you know, that happens with basically his you know, It's a hard for the, a lot of things really important. Yada. Greg, what does every candidate say in every single ad that they run?
I'm fill in the blank and I approve this message.
Exactly. He cannot say, oh, I didn't see it, or you know, the campaign, there's somebody else. You know, his traditional blame shifting, blame the staff, one of his underlings screwed up. What else are you going to do? Type excuses don't work because of one of the efforts designed to stop not just negative campaigning, but blatantly false and misleading campaigning is making the candidates take responsibility for what's in their ads. And in this, Barack Obama, oh, you know, that happened. Well, don't look at me. I'm just a candidate. I'm just the president of the United States. I don't look at these things. Yes, you do. You know, the only thing I can think of that kind of makes me, I think it was comparable, is I remember Newt Gingrich giving Romney grief about a Spanish language ad that Mitt Romney was running. And, you know, Gingrich said, your ad is accusing me of such and such. And I don't remember the precise thing of it. And Romney was saying, no, he doesn't. And Gingrich was saying, yes, you do. I think the issue may have come down to an issue of translation of a particular word. But I wondered if for the Spanish language ad, whether candidates should say, so I meet Romney and I approve this message, but I do not understand this message. Giving candidates a certain out for language, for ads that are run in different languages. I'm soy just reading words in front of me and hoping that it makes sense, you know. Everything gets a little lost in translation, I suppose. So it'd be interesting to see if people watching that would think better or worse of the president when he's, you know, confronted with this and kind of gives this, you know, offhand excuse about the whole thing.
On to martini number three now, Jim. And we often say that, you know, people like Chris Matthews have a stake in the third martini. But Elizabeth Warren is quickly rising in a number of appearances in the third martini. And I think this one actually even trumps Cherokee Gate. This is a clip of the debate just a few days ago where Elizabeth Warren, of course, is trying to declare herself to be a champion of the little guy. And Scott Brown, towards the end of the debate, says, oh, yeah, well, you just deprived a bunch of people who suffered from asbestos poisoning because you represented Travelers Insurance a number of years ago. Here's a brief excerpt of that exchange.
And you denied, through your efforts, you denied people who had asbestos poisoning their benefits. And so we're talking about fighting for the little guy? You made a choice. You fought for the biggest corporation, the biggest insurance company in our country.
I'm going to give you the final word on this.
It's just not true. The Boston Globe has looked at this. They've written about it. And it's all clear. I've been out there for working families. I've been out there for working people.
I love the Scott Brown disgust when she says it's just not true. Here's the story from Legal Insurrection. Warren attempted to deny her role and referred to a Boston Globe article, but the Globe supports Brown's account. The Globe article indicated the representation was for a period of 3 years, and Warren was paid $212,000. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. Turns out Elizabeth Warren has never actually been licensed to practice law, never passed the Massachusetts bar. And beyond that, which is, of course, illegal, she was apparently practicing law out of her Harvard office, which apparently is also illegal. So Jim, Scott Brown couldn't have asked for a better outcome here.
Well, remember, I mean, Elizabeth Warren, as the consumer protection advocate, et cetera, is these, you know, effectively self-appointed, or I could say Obama-appointed person, to look out for misdeeds and wrongdoing and illegal behavior on the part of other people. Now, here's the thing. You know, this it is worth reading the entire post over at Legal Insurrection. William Jacobson is a law professor who is he's been following the Massachusetts Senate race like nobody else. He is a really smart guy. You see him quoted in the Morning Jolt very regularly because this guy just, you know, knows stuff, writes interesting stuff. And he's exposed what appears to be criminal wrongdoing on the part of Elizabeth Warren. And I'll just kind of walk through the basic points. One is that there is no record of Elizabeth Warren ever being licensed to practice law in Massachusetts. That doesn't, you know, necessarily by itself isn't a huge deal, except that she's been active as a lawyer since then. Now, some of this is, you know, you don't need a law license to teach law at Harvard Law School. But you do need it if you're going to practice law. And everyone's going to say, well, what is practice law? Well, apparently the, you know, Massachusetts legal code defines it pretty broadly. You know, the examination of statutes, judicial decisions, and departmental rulings for the purpose of advising upon a question of law and the rendering to a client of an opinion thereon. Now, obviously, that work for the Travelers Company certainly does appear to be legal work. Now, she also did several Supreme Court arguments and stuff like and various other legal cases. Well, is she licensed somewhere else? Yeah, she was licensed up in New Jersey, except she doesn't have an office in New Jersey. She only has an office up at Harvard University. So the facts are pretty obvious here that unless she's got some secret law office in Massachusetts she's hidden or there's some sort of, you know, the Massachusetts has somehow lost her license to practice or something like that. She practiced law without a license for about 10 years in the state of Massachusetts. This is a fairly big deal, it would seem. It makes Pocahontas, claims of Native American ancestry look like small potatoes. And again, we cannot overemphasize enough how much Elizabeth Warren touts herself as the protector of the innocent and this, you know, standing up for law and order. And here she is violating the law for the better part of a decade. Hopefully this will get the attention it deserves. I think it's safe to say that the Brown campaign will probably make a big deal out of this. The Boston Globe may or may not bother to pay any attention to this. There's hypocrisy, and then there's, you know, just jaw-dropping cases like this. And, you know, you look at this and have a hard time believing that the Elizabeth Warren campaign could just brush off or laugh off an allegation of a decade's worth of violating Massachusetts state law.
You would think so. My favorite reaction to this one on Twitter, just how much is Scott Brown paying the Massachusetts Democratic Party to keep putting up the most incompetent possible opponents from a party that should be winning easily in that state. So,
well, right now, you got to figure that Martha Coakley's looking at her and saying, man, she's terrible. She's a terrible candidate. My God, somebody should give her some advice because, you know, I mean, me and the Red Sox fans, we look like buddy-buddy compared to this.
So. That's right. Well done, Elizabeth Warren. You've done more for this race for Scott Brown than he could possibly have done for himself. Jim, great way to start the week.
Looking forward to tomorrow, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.